And we are live. This is Dark Journalist. Oh, what a fantastic crowd we have out there tonight in the Ideas Room already. Now, tonight I am joined by the lovely Olivia.
Hi, everybody.
And Olivia, it's hip to be square.
How so?
Well, or saucer-shaped if you're Barack Obama mm-hmm. or Gary Nolan. Dr. Gary Nolan, of course, big, big fan, friend of Dr. Fauci. Mm-hmm. And now he's a UFO hero, everybody. But unfortunately, he works for the CIA. So it's the UFO threat, Gary Nolan, coming at you with UAP.
Okay.
So we're going to get into that tonight as well. A lot going on. This is a special two-hour report, and it's all about Ahriman. In fact, it is Ahriman Goes Mainstream. And this is important because it gets into the eighth sphere, the UFO file, and AI, but how Ahriman is now coming through. And we hinted at this in last week's episode where we got into some of the X factor with Elon Musk. Tonight, we're going to go even deeper. And the timing is becoming more and more crucial, especially there's a crisscross here with the Ahriman sort of revelation and UFO disclosure. They're going sort of hand in hand. And what we're going to do it, we're going to do it our way tonight, you know, because the CIA is out there doing it their way. And we need to kind of repolarize the situation back to the right polarity. We're going to be taking your questions in the second half of tonight's program. You can ask them now and ask them all in caps for Miss Olivia. Mm-hmm. And before I go any further, Miss Olivia, how's the temperature out there?
Temperature's great. Polaris 23 says, Liberace Ahriman, Grimes, no words. And Cameron Patrick Scott says, Ahriman looking dapper. Maybe the stone cold freak is starting to chill out.
That's pretty good. Yeah, well, you know, Ahriman kind of suits up to this period. Doesn't he kind of look right in this period? That's the strange
thing.
Shockingly,
yes.
Yeah, it's very strange. You can picture him doing this Super Bowl halftime. And as far as Grimes go, you know, it's interesting because Grimes has a lot of fans and she's very creative and she has a good body of work and all the rest of it. So it's not so much, you know, I kind of take in the 70s and 80s, there was a researcher named Mae Brussel and she took the opinion that the intel groups attempted to control people when they became celebrities. And they would sometimes put them in a position and then manipulate them with handlers and cause their deaths and do all sorts of things. And she went all the way through, you know, from everyone from Jimi Hendrix to Freddie Prinze to John Belushi. And I found that information very telling because I think they created a different sort of idea later that you were supposed to resent Britney, or you were supposed to resent this or that celebrity, and they were the ones. When in fact, it was the hidden hand behind them that was really up to it. And I think in the Grimes case, you know, you have someone there who is putting forward a certain amount of creative activity. What I want to focus on with her is the fact that she's involved with this Ahriman movie, which does premiere June 11th in Paris, and they're doing a whole fantasy film festival there. Now, you know, this is not a large, big budget Hollywood Steven Spielberg movie about Ahriman. But nonetheless, the fact that she's involved and then we consider her involvement with Elon Musk, presumably the richest man in the world, the Howard Hughes of his day in this era, from Twitter to Tesla to SpaceX and all the ex-steganography in between, and along with all those wonderful DARPA connections that our friend has, the significance of the woman who, you know, has two children with him being in this Ahriman movie and being crisscrossed with that imagery gets us right into what Steiner was predicting for the 21st century. And you kind of feel like we're right coming in on that apex point, just that interesting place on the scale where the harmonic is just going to open up a lot, shall we say. Now, what's interesting to me about all this is it comes in just as we're getting this phony UFO disclosure piece from the CIA, who's tried it through a number of different people, and we've calculated and really gone in depth on that on this show significantly. I'm going to start off with this right away because it has to do with Gary Nolan, who we've covered in this program, and who is linked with Dr. Fauci, and this, he works for the Central Intelligence Agency. Those two things are on fact. You know, they're on record and they're facts. So there are a lot of people who are like, oh, you know, this noble guy, how could you say that about him? That's in his bio. And there's numerous articles about it. All you have to do is half-inch deep research. You find him surrounded by CIA people since 2011. Now, if you get a project from the Central Intelligence Agency, that doesn't make you a bad person. No. But if you are involved in the same type of rhetoric, the UFO threat rhetoric, and in this case, you actually say you're a contactee who saw an ET, you know, by the moon. It sounds a lot like Steven Spielberg's ET movie. In fact, he's like, you know, Gary Nolan recounts being on a bike as a kid and throwing a paper and looking up and seeing a UFO. And Nolan's very close and very involved with this whole piece about the UFO threat. And this is the next wave that they're doing on this. And the other piece of the UFO threatster package was Lou Elizondo. And guess what? The two of them together now are putting together a charity, which is you know, a whole nonprofit thing where they can get their UFO research done under the wing of this nonprofit thing. So I'm trying to get the name of that, but this reeks of just more CIA, you know, throwing these things at the wall and trying to really create, you know, this false disclosure piece. It's very important with what's gone on at the start of the year, and we're going to get into why that's true as we go here tonight. I'm going to be going deep on Steiner tonight in the Eighth Sphere, the Ahriman piece, and how Ahriman is being mainlined through everything from movies to video games, music, and the rest of it. Ahriman, his time is nearing, and we need to be very aware of that. And as we've covered on this program, it's in Steiner's cosmology about the significance of that for humanity in this period. And Steiner looking off, you know, there in 1920 into the future for us 100 years later, he was seeing all these things happen. And if you read through that material, it reads like today's headlines. So we're going to try to get that message straight and what the Western mystery schools were trying to bring out for us in this period. Very important. Before we go any further, I want to remind you, especially if you're new here, to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our free newsletter. That's what keeps you in touch with us through the massive censorship that we've had. And I've gone into this before, but you know, they've tried to de-amplify what we've done, whether it's political or mystical or UFOs, whatever it happens to be. So we deal with a lot of that, but I try not to complain about these things because, you know, I'm going to use the networks while they're there. But the best thing we can do is have this direct pipeline through the newsletter. And basically you get it once a week and it lets you know of the incredible, and I mean remarkable interviews that we have coming up for you, which are going to blow your mind. And of course, phenomenal X-Series episodes like the X-Series celebration of 150 episodes that's going to happen next Friday. And it's either going to be a mega 4-hour episode or two 2-hour episodes. I haven't decided yet,
okay.
But that's kind of where we're going on that. And that's next week. Put it on your calendar Friday night for 8 p.m. But tonight, Ahriman goes mainstream with the UFO file, the Eighth Sphere, and AI. So I'm going to jump into this now. And before I do, Miss Olivia, you're up.
Tok Ra says, is Ahriman considered to be the spirit of the Antichrist?
Yeah, he's been identified that way. He's been identified as Mephistopheles, Satan, the devil. And in fact, one of the things that Steiner does is he says the traditional Bible devil is in fact Ahriman, and that Lucifer shows up as the fallen angel, you know, all these different things. But he splits those two influences, Ahriman and Lucifer. You know, he says both of them are working against humanity in different ways, but that also humanity needs to derive something from them by facing up to them and extracting from them this experience. In the case of Lucifer, it has been the mind. And, you know, he says that humanity has a long history of interacting with Luciferic beings. But he comes in on that angle, which is more about Lucifer Gnosis. And the Lucifer Gnosis is different than, say, pagan worship of the devil or something like that. That is goes far more into the Ahriman Belial piece. But, you know, these things, that split influence is interesting because the way that he does it is this kind of a polarity. On one end, you have Ahriman. The other end, you have Lucifer, and they're both working to their own ends to complete humanity's evolution for their terms. And in the middle, you have the Christ, the esoteric Christ, and that whole influence of esoteric Christianity as the barrier between those two polarities. And in either case, what I find interesting is when Steiner goes into Ahriman in particular, he says that he aims at the head of humanity. So we get into this era of immense technology and things of this nature, virtual reality. It is the mind over and over again that's being targeted. So the idea in the cosmology gets us into the Ahrimanic forces trying to take the mind of humanity into the eighth sphere, this virtual reality realm, which is their natural, Ahriman's natural home, as it were. And there's a whole cosmology associated with it. I have some of that tonight, and along with the interesting Zoroastrian references of Ahriman and Ahura Mazda and the fascinating mythological story back there. But I think what we're really going to do tonight is I've taken some very specific references from Steiner tonight, and I'm going to show also how this crossover from Steiner's version of the Eighth Sphere and some of the deeper aspects around Ahriman show up in UFO research by one of the late but top researchers in the field, and his name was J. Allen Hynek. So there's a huge UFO crisscross here, and I've heard these stories directly. So that's going to get interesting. Let's start with Nolan, though. So, okay, Nolan is a Stanford professor who works in immunology, and he got involved around UFO projects through the Central Intelligence Agency, has worked with the Central Intelligence Agency since 2011. In my opinion, probably a lot longer, probably from when he was a student coming up, etc. And the general thrust of Nolan's trip has been, oh, there's all this brain activities with abductees. And by the way, I'm an abductee. And even though I work for the Central Intelligence Agency, I'm going to be able to give you UFO truth. And so he comes out with this whole thing about, they invite him to a venture capital conference in New York a couple of days ago. And he's there. The conference is called SALT. And you have people there who are like really, the billionaire venture capital class, which lets you know there's going to be UFO investment pieces coming in. So we could think of this as the breakaways breaking back in. And that is the technology aspect we've been discussing on this program, which is why all this gets so interesting. But before I go any further, yeah.
I like that, the breakaways breaking back in. Could you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, when you look at the people who've run off with the technology for the last eight decades, and they're inside the government, but they moved it outside to these defense contractor and that mysterious corridor right between the aerospace defense contractors and the intelligence people. So in that corridor, I've identified the group as X-Protect. And they've had this X technology, and it relates directly to the UFO reverse engineering technology. However, it also relates to technology, for example, that Tesla discovered. So it's got a crisscross there. The UFO file, all the X technology resides inside of it. But what these technologies have in common is that they have certain features. And some of those features are, to the point where they make something like the atomic bomb seem like a firecracker. And, we've heard about things in the nature of torsion physics. We've heard about, some of the effects of the Nazi Bell and things that they were working on. This gets us into that avenue or lane. So it's the piece that's left off by history. But every once in a while, there are these unexplained things, like these objects showing up and flying through things or pulling people through walls, eliminating time or shutting off the power grid wherever they are. That's the apotheum effect inside the UFO technology effect. And I think this is what got their attention on the government side. I think they were aware of it for a long, long time, but I think they really got their program together heavily in the early 20th century. 19th century, their aerospace groups, as we've gone into on this program, and there's some excellent researchers along this line, including Walter Bosley. And that gets us into a whole wave of advanced technology in the 19th century around flight and aerospace. But even without pulling that whole part in, it's very clear that something else has been going on in the background in relation to this. So let's fast forward. The CIA keeps this secret, works with this X-Protect group. The CIA are a direct liaison with X-Protect. X-Protect is an intelligence group, but they're directly connected to the aerospace wing. Now, you might say to yourself, well, I haven't heard of X-Protect except in the X series. you know, we had a very secret organization called the National Reconnaissance Office, and they were in charge of all our satellites. And they weren't on record for two decades after they were created during the Kennedy administration. And they were kept under wraps completely. And we didn't actually get to their actual role in the government until 1995, 35 years after they were created. So there are organizations operating now that we know absolutely nothing about, but we see their footsteps and their places. So this is where the X-Protect piece comes in. Now I'm going to show you where the Aramonic piece, the Eighth Sphere, and the UFO file all interface around this, and how the X technology is the key to this whole piece. And we're going to get into that tonight through this special Dark Journalist report. And this is Aramon Goes Mainstream. And he's going mainstream with AI, the Eighth Sphere, and the UFO file all at the same time. Now, Gary Nolan is an interesting character in all this because, as I said, the CIA spotted him out early. And he worked and showed up in a number of these different programs. TTSA grabbed him. He was originally part of TTSA. Then he left.
Was he with Greer first?
Oh, he's had different crisscrosses in his career, but specifically, he's somebody who's, you know, worked deeply with the CIA and TTSA at Stanford. Now, what's interesting to me when we look at his background is he's saying that he's a contactee. There's a whole wave of CIA people coming out and saying, I'm a contactee. John Ramirez is making all the rounds saying, hey, I had these experiences. And Jim Semivan, who started TTSA, even though they had Tom DeLonge as the Bobo, you know, that was totally different. The actual person behind it was Jim Semivan, who was such a high-level CIA operative that no one even knew of his existence until 2015. So this is a guy who ranked incredibly high in the whole picture and in the whole secrecy scheme. He was coming out and saying, oh, I had these experiences, and, you know, I'm in charge of TTSA. So the To the Stars Academy created the whole bogus New York Times disclosure with Lou Elizondo and saying, I'm a whistleblower, and damn that government and all that, and I just got out of the government, when in fact he was still in the government. So these people are the government. We have to remember that when they try to turn, like Nolan does too, and say, oh, I'm against that government, give me that secrecy and the UFO file, they are the government. They work inside the government. Especially Elizondo. You know, Elizondo works in intelligence for the government. And someone, you know, once in a while, they'll say, well, he's just a contractor. It's the same thing. You're under government rules, you know, and they'll keep you happy with little connected up jobs, contracting. So that whole New York Times thing was bogus. The Tic Tac thing, which had already been online via YouTube since 2007, there were a lot of bogus elements. And these have been proven out by me and others, the Black Vault and New York Post and all kinds of stuff. So that whole thing was a sham. And Elizondo saying that he was in charge of a secret UFO program also turned out to be a sham. And later he admitted it in a government filing, saying it was an activity, it wasn't a paid program, you know. So that whole narrative about, oh, this UFO leader, you know, of a defense program that was hidden comes out and spills all because he's a whistleblower. He was never a whistleblower. he was always in the government, and he never led a UFO program. Those are the facts. The people in the UFO industry, and even the, you know, people who were formerly, you know, on top of things like Knapp and Dolan and stuff like that, they all were cheerleaders for this, and that's how it got past the regular gateway. That's the unfortunate part. So, but Nolan snuck in there in the background as well. And I think what they were trying to do after a while, we put so much focus on this program, on the UFO threat program that the CIA was operating, that what they decided to do, you know, this got picked up and they were starting to be like, what are they doing with this UFO threat? So the UFO threat is a key piece of how they operate in the future with emergency powers through the continuity of government program using the UFO threat. That's why they've tried to make the UFO threat viable. The real footsteps and fingerprint of that is that they attached the UFO Defense Office, ARRO, A-A-R-O, to the National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA. And that means, you know, every year we pass this $1 trillion giveaway to the military. And what they did, the people who did it were Gillibrand, Senator Gillibrand from New York, and Senator Rubio from Florida, we know Rubio. And they attached through the NDAA this UFO Defense Office, which means since they were on the Senate Intelligence Committee, if you didn't pass the UFO Defense Office, nothing else. All that $1 trillion gets held up. So it's a unanimous vote. It gets in. So now they have the infrastructure there inside government to start using this technology and then creating the threat and then funding it and all the rest of it. This is what they're in the middle of. Now, they had two side projects in case the UFO threat aspect got into trouble, which it did. Because as soon as people hear about that, they start to be like, well, you know, we've heard things before about Blue Beam. It's sort of a street legend, but it's something there in the consciousness. People can kind of feel the phoniness of what they were saying. And so what happens, it's quite fascinating. In the background, Nolan is developed on one track. And then on the other track, we have AI Avi Loeb over here at Harvard. And his little lab is just a few minutes from our studios here. And Avi Loeb says, oh, the Oumuamua object that was sailing through the galaxy, that actually is AI trying to contact us. You know, we don't know what the message is. Well, I'm sure it's like some, you know, environmental message, you know, oh, your citizens need to pay taxes to clean up the environment. And so they have a whole Oumuamua AI piece with Loeb. And Loeb started something called the Galileo Project. This is crucial because Nolan shouts out to the Galileo Project. And I looked at the Galileo Project originally. I thought, this is an interesting idea. But I knew that Loeb was Israeli intelligence, and that bothered me right off the bat. But then originally they had staff scientists and things on the board. Suddenly, Christopher Mellon, Lou Elizondo, and all the CIA crew come in. And so that's who controls Galileo Project now. That's the end of that. You know, they had a few months ago, they had Lou and Elizondo and Loeb putting a UAP observatory telescope on top of the Harvard Astronomy Lab. I mean, this is how ridiculous this is getting. Remember, Elizondo's story has no basis in fact at all. And it's been widely exposed, even though all the media networks gave him tons of airtime. But in the middle of this, they had Gary Nolan's thing. And I think what they did is they decided, well, we need to switch out Elizondo for Nolan, because Elizondo was getting into fights with people. He was getting on these small podcasts and calling, you know, calling them mother names, you know, and saying, if you don't agree with me, your mom's a hooker. So, I mean, he's, you know, this is the mentality. When Elizondo is not controlled, he's not a very good spokesman for anything. And he lost a lot of what he was trying to get across. Now they have him in the background with this book deal and this book project. But this is all, you know, Lou, like anyone in this whole kind of cosmic soap opera that they're running at the CIA, it could be anybody that they threw out there. It happened to be Lou, and they've been using him over the years as part of this. Unfortunately, he's told so many public lies at this point. His credibility is very low for anyone who actually looks at it. You know, like I said, the UFO field defended the guy dramatically, even after his story fell apart in public. And the reason they did that, I think, is because the UFO field is not a legitimate field. It does not have the checks and balances that you'd get in other fields. You know, like with deep state researchers, there's more of a, well, you know, you check this information against that information. If that person's lying, then out the window it goes. And so that's part of the problem with the UFO field. So anyway, Nolan comes out, and he is someone who's, you know, very vocal about, oh, people who have these experiences, there's something different about their brains after they interact with a UFO. And he's coming in on this track, and the CIA is like, why don't you study these brains and find out what's going on, since you yourself are a contactee, and we have all these contactee agents all of a sudden. Now, in the background, there's a friendship also with Nolan and Fauci, and that's a problem. I've tried to get to the bottom of how deep that friendship goes, but it looks, you know, from at least what we can see in public, there's a lot of high-fiving and congratulations, Dr. Fauci, you're the greatest, and this kind of stuff. And I have some of that tonight as well. But along the road, and this is always a very big tell, while doing this research in a kind of respectful journalistic manner and always saying, if you want to come on for a gentleman's debate, you can come on the Dark Journalist Show. There's hundreds of thousands of listeners and viewers here. Tell us your story. Well, you know, when they hear about Dark Journalist, I swear to God, you know, anyone associated with this thing, they run for the hills, because I'm just going to ask them a couple minutes worth of questions and the whole op fades away. Because once I link the fact that the CIA is in charge of the operation, that's the end of the operation, in fact. So Nolan's response to all this was block them. Just block them. It's that easy.
It was actually overdue.
I've been seeing this one coming. But it's interesting because Elizondo had done the same thing. So that's their response. Oh, just block them, you know, on Twitter. Now, here's the important thing about Fauci and Nolan. When Fauci says, oh, I'm going to step down at the end of the year and all that, we have to remember this is the same Fauci who lied to congressional committees, who got us into all this trouble during the pandemic, who lied to the president, who's deep, deep in that pharmaceutical takeover complex involved in this. And here is Nolan, the same guy who's supposed to be this UFO disclosure hero, and he says, thank you, Dr. Fauci, for your tremendously positive contributions to immunology and virology. Dr. Fauci, this is what he's retweeting, Dr. Fauci is a real hero who dedicated his life to science and helping people. Mm. Oh, tell that to all the people who, you know, let's say had complications as a result of his activities. He led the charge against HIV. Well, that's another story. Even 30 years ago, there were investigations into what he was doing there. And COVID, we're forever in his debt, and I'm grateful for his 50 plus years of service. Enjoy your retirement, Tony. So that's a tweet.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Why would he feel the need to do this, to signal this publicly? Knowing that.
I don't think he cares. I don't think he cares.
Yeah, but I mean, but if he knows Fauci, he could have said it privately. Why does he say it on Twitter?
No, because he's still praising his legion. You know, this is the people that are in his milieu, and there's not supposed to be anything wrong with Fauci, remember?
Right.
So Nolan, but the thing is about Nolan is he has a number of tentacles like this from his position there at Stanford. And so the deeper you get, you know, that's a pretty dirty connection as far as Fauci goes. And you get nowhere, you know, how would you like Fauci to give you UFO disclosure? How does that feel about the nature of humanity?
Yeah, Discount Ovid says, wink and nod club. This is exactly what I was aiming at, you know?
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. But there's more. Let's keep going with Nolan. Dr. Gary Nolan says humans aren't at the top of the intelligence hierarchy. He'll be speaking to 1,500 CEOs at a conference about investing to study UAP. You mean UFOs? He started a charity with the help of Lou Elizondo. I lose a good guy starting a charity. Shoot. The money will go to write policy papers for the government and funding agencies like National Science Foundation. Hey, hey. And that is actually all true. It's in a tweet by UAP James, and he played this little interaction that Fauci, you know, I'm sorry, Gary Nolan was saying, well, you know, not only are we going to have people at this conference, but they're going to be venture investors. And I'm not talking about some $50,000 investors. Like, these are big time billionaires, you know? So this is, you know, this is the milieu, this is the mindset that this guy's coming from. Now, I've been talking about the UFO threat piece that the CIA has been running. And the people around that whole false disclosure milieu. By the way, UFOs are real. UFO disclosure can be real. But the CIA is running the false version. That's what we're getting at here. So let's not confuse those two. I want to play now, and this one should be really kind of going directly to, someone should put this in Richard Dolan's email box. They should put it in the whole UFO community, because here is Nolan admitting that they use the UFO threat narrative. This is part of their program. He admitted this during this venture capital SALT conference. And here's just a clip of it. This is just a short clip. But let's hear Gary on his own. This is just Nolan talking.
I'm just going to be honest, we've used the threat narrative that these things are showing up repeatedly. I mean, this is today. They're showing up repeatedly around our ships. So I think the objective has been to make it okay to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because we made it okay to talk about it, we opened the apertures on the filters on the sensor systems. That's what partly led to the seeing of those Chinese balloons.
All right. So here's what's funny about that. So now, not only is he admitting to the UFO threat narrative, and the CIA puts him up to this thing, and he says, well, you know, we use this UFO threat narrative to get attention. He said, because we did that, they changed the filters so the NORAD COG commanders and people at NORAD could see these other things. And guess what? They saw all those balloons. That's why we saw those balloons before we couldn't see balloons, you know. Can you imagine all the Cold War adversaries that we had turning over in their graves and thinking, oh, if we only had that America in our sights, we could have defeated them with hot air balloons. Come on, get real. For years, we've had things in place for balloons. They didn't get changed because of your weird UAP nonsense. And we've had actually, and I investigated this, we've had rules in place about balloons from foreign countries since Japan in World War II sent over these poisonous bomb balloons to our West Coast. So you can't float a balloon over the continental United States. It's never happened until this incident that took place in February with Biden allowing it to just stroll on by. And then us shooting down those UFOs with, I almost said Justin Bieber, Justin Trudeau. And the New York Times saying, oh, UFO shoot down and all this stuff. That is all to implant this in our minds. And so I want to play the beginning of this again. So we really have this clear. This is Nolan saying we used the UFO threat narrative. Are you ready? Just on the record here, this is what I've been saying on this show for how long? And the whole UFO field's like, no, they're not using a threat narrative. This is him. This is the guy who's using it with Elizondo and all the rest.
I'm just going to be honest. We've used the threat narrative that these things are showing up repeatedly. I mean, this is today. They're showing up repeatedly around our ships. So I think the objective has been to make it okay to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because we made it okay to talk about it, we opened the apertures on the filters on the sensor systems. That's what partly led to the seeing of those Chinese balloons. You wouldn't have seen that if it weren't for that.
Yeah.
Right? Because we created laws that said it's time to open the apertures because they were only looking at particular flight paths of things that look like a missile or a plane.
Wow. Well, that's the biggest crock in history. And so here's the Stanford professor who admits to using the UFO threat thing through the CIA and all of his pals like Elizondo and all the rest. Now he's saying, because of that, we got laws passed where they changed the filters. Now they can see all these UFOs and balloons and all kinds of stuff.
Telling that to?
He's talking at the conference, and there's the guy who's hosting the conference who represents...
supposedly a smart guy.
Well, he represents all the investors, mm-hmm. all the billionaire investors, don't you know? So, yeah, no, there's no challenge, if that's what you mean. Mm-hmm. But it's a good point, which is it's so ridiculous. He should have stopped and said, what? And this is what I get at. And it just happens to be in that UFO field, the way that they've laid it out is when somebody like Nolan or somebody like Elizondo would go on someone like George Knapp's show, they would sit there and say, well, do you think of yourself more as a hero or more of a legend? And they say, well, George, I'll leave that to the public to decide. I'll just keep fighting the good fight against that government. So these are government agents creating a false narrative. And it is outrageous, and it needs to be exposed. And the media, of course, will pick it up because it's a bunch of headlines and clicks for them. But in fact, this is the CIA threat narrative getting up a notch, getting into position. And they had a pretty good dry run with their balloon spectacle and the phony UFO shootdowns, which, by the way, they never showed any debris or any film or anything from any of that stuff. The only thing they had was one weird Chinese balloon that for some reason they let sail across the United States. Well, I've pointed out, and I have stories here about other balloons. For example, this one 2 weeks ago, another mysterious balloon sighted, this one over Hawaii. You just don't let that happen. So, you know, they're in a very interesting phase of creating, you know, these little scares here and there, when ordinarily what you do with a balloon is you see it approaching the homeland, as it were, if you're at NORAD, and you shoot it down, you get rid of it, or you immobilize it and pull it down. They have all kinds of methods and means for doing this. So this whole thing about like, oh, we don't know what those balloons are and we can't do anything to stop them until they move out to sea, you know, that's all BS. But what's interesting is that Nolan is picking up on this in the middle of the conference, and he's saying, oh, because we passed these laws, we now can see these balloons, and that's why, you know, we're getting into this. So we've got a lie upon lie, and that's what the CIA does. You have to understand, if you're in the UFO field, if you study the CIA, you'll find out that one of their rules is there is no truth. So that's a problem. You're not going to get any ethical activity if there's no truth. So all they have are objectives, no truths. So therefore, you know, the records that they are holding in relation to the assassination of President Kennedy, well, it's, you know, that's because of national security, whatever. But instead, what it shows is an agency out of control assassinating their own commander in chief and then holding the record 60 years later. We have two presidential candidates out there now, President Trump and Bobby Kennedy Jr. They're both saying, hey, those records are coming out. You know, they need to come out because, in Bobby's case, he said, well, the CIA assassinated my uncle and my father. That's pretty heavy coming from a Kennedy. And in Trump's case, you know, he's saying, huh, I should have let the whole thing out. I left a lot of it out, but, you know, they convinced me otherwise, but I'm going to let the rest out now that when I get in. When he was talking to Judge Napolitano, as I exposed in this program, and it got picked up dramatically, and thank God it did, because the ideas room talks, which is the wonderful thing about it. But what he said was, you know, I can't release those records. This is what he was telling Napolitano at the end of his administration. If you saw what was in there, you wouldn't release it either. That gets us more in line of what we're talking about. And by the way, that's related to the UFO file as well. Miss Olivia.
Brian Storm says, UAP is what happens when UFO and CIA have a baby.
That's it. Yeah, UAP is just a marketing technique. And the UFO field should have said, no, we're not going to use it. You know, that would have been the end of that. And in fact, when they want to drive a story, they'll still use UFO because this UAP thing never really caught on. And it's a lame title. It's just a rebranding title. And again, names can be very important, just like when you try to change the name of the United States to Homeland and you create something called Homeland Security. Well, that all goes outside the Constitution because the United States has a Constitution. Homeland doesn't have anything. It has directives from Homeland Security, you know, so that's a fascist
state. Isn't that so
state.
Different from the gender discussions that we have?
True.
You know, what is a woman? You know, labels.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
Well, these are totalitarian controls that are being introduced, and they're being introduced through organizations like Homeland Security, but they're also being introduced through the biometric tracking and the satellite tracking and the digital passport and this whole kind of thing. So there's a whole infrastructure for totalitarians to take over, and this is the nature of the problem that we're facing. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. deep tonight. We're going, Ahriman goes mainstream, but first we got to that UFO file problem. And AI in the Eighth Sphere is involved in both of these. So we're going to go deep on that. We're going to be taking your questions in the second half of tonight's show. And before we go any further, Miss Olivia.
You know, I'm thinking about how this started. I think this started with texting, actually, you know, LOL and things like all the shorthand. Yeah. We stopped appreciating language. Kids don't even know how to speak anymore.
Mm.
Right? Yeah. They certainly don't know how to do math.
Yeah.
But they don't know how to construct a sentence. They don't know or appreciate poetry, right? Or enunciation, you know, diction, anything. Like, it's all just shorthand. It's all, everything is corrupted.
It's really true. Well, you know, there's the whole thing in 1984 when Orwell, looking out into the future, had such a interesting look at the period that we're in, because there was that whole thing about shrinking the usage of words, you know, and double plus good and things of this nature. That was really the hardcore piece involved with that. And I think when we look at Orwell, the idea that if you can't express yourself, you know, if your levels of expression are brought down, that you won't be able to really articulate ideas. And ultimately, that's a centralization technique, as it were. So we find ourselves in the middle of this again, in fact. So now let's back out into the UFO file through the figure of J. Allen Hynek, who was one of the top scientists involved in studying it. And he actually appeared in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And what's interesting, too, is he was so important to that whole disclosure effort around the 70s and 80s that I think he was regarded as a heavy danger by the people who were on the inside, the X-Protect types. What happened with him was he was one of the original scientists they brought in for Project Blue Book, and he was the guy who was supposed to go around debunking everything. And at a certain point, they got him up in front of microphones when Congressman Ford, of all people, in a bizarre power play, decided that all these sightings that were going on in Michigan in 1966 needed a real answer from the government. So they rolled him out, and he was the one who said, oh, it's swamp gas that's causing this. So Hynek was legendary after that because he quit Blue Book and he quit the government, and he was like, I'm going to really find out the answers around this. And he became one of the leading researchers on the UFO front, really inspiring a host of people. And there were a lot of people who got into it then, I think, because of him. Now, later, you find there is no figure who kind of takes the place of that. And this is part of the problem with the UFO field, which is you got some real giants like Hynek, John Mack, Stanton Friedman, you know, and this ilk. And then the research groups around them were just drained because there was no media support around the idea. And there was no academic support. So the CIA was able to bring it down, down, down. So when they came out, you know, in 2017 with their false UFO threat piece, which they've been ramping up now, and they're really coming to fruition and will be top, really on the top of the political agenda in 2024. And I've been indicating it's a really strong piece for the presidential candidates. They need to get in on this topic and they need to talk about it now. Way before the CIA can just run away with it. So the Trump camp and the Kennedy camp, bring that topic in. And if you need a lesson or two about how to do it, I'll be happy to pass that along. Mm-hmm. but in any case, Hynek, I think, brought something special to the table. And I remember a conversation I had with Linda Moulton Howe, and I was talking to her about Rudolf Steiner, and she said, you know, I really never knew much about Steiner. And she said, but oddly enough, I was talking to J. Allen Hynek one night and I asked him, you know, what do you think, like, what's the answer on this UFO thing? And he said, I think the answer is in this book. That book is Rudolf Steiner's Theosophy. Now, this isn't like an overview of the Theosophical Society or anything. It's a treatise on the nature of reality. And he's just calling it Theosophy. This is Steiner's Theosophy. Now, Steiner was in the Theosophical Society for a decade before he broke away and did the Anthroposophical Society, which is still around today. And, you know, we've talked about the many things that are still kind of offshoots and just like a real legacy of the work that he did, including the Waldorf schools and biodynamic farming and things of this nature. Now, for me, it's interesting when I heard that. So I went back and I checked out the history around the esoteric subject and Hynek. And what I found at the time was that, you know, he was very invested in things like Manly P. Hall's work. He knew a lot about theosophy, anthroposophy. So he understood the esoteric side, which might have been interesting when they brought him in on the UFO side. He might have had that extra insight that was informing him. But I was also trying to think, what is it that's in the theosophy book that would have informed him about it? There's a major discussion in there about Ahriman and about elementals. And elementals, you know, there's so many different stories, but it's these interbetween beings. And we've had them in medieval literature and historical lore, fairies and things of this nature. But they're understood as sort of a shadow in that astral realm. But it's a whole different group that's very similar to humans, but they aren't human. So when Steiner puts those together, we get some very interesting results. I'm going to read that. But there's a little background piece on Hynek that I want to put on the record with this. So let's go ahead and do that. By the way, the shot of Ahriman targeting the head there of humanity. There's just a blackboard drawing by Steiner from 1924. I think it, you know, gives us something of an idea right off the bat. That's Hynek in Close Encounters. And he really, you know, he was this kind of remarkable figure in astronomy and in the UFO research investigation. I think we could have brought forward in the 80s a, you know, very robust, interesting disclosure through someone like Hynek. He had the scientific gravitas on one hand and the understanding of the UFO file on the other. Okay, a little bit of a background bio on Hynek. As a bookish teenager, Hynek began to study what he called esoteric subjects. After reading widely in the occult, he developed a particular fondness for the writings of the Rosicrucian secret societies, with their tantalizing promises of hidden ancient knowledge. The high schooler spent over $100, roughly $1,300 in today's dollars, to purchase the Canadian mystic Manly P. Hall's massive, richly illustrated encyclopedic outline of Masonic, Hermetic, Kabbalistic, and Rosicrucian symbolical philosophy. So there's a conversation that he has with Jacques Vallée, and he says, "All my student friends thought I was crazy. Why didn't I buy a motorcycle instead, as they all did?" Hynek was often evasive when asked to give his own theories of the nature of UFOs. He actually rejected the notion that UFOs were nuts and bolts spacecraft pirated by extraterrestrials. This is recorded in a series of different books and bios. His occult study had pointed him in a very different direction. As early as 1967, he speculated that UFOs might be observational devices that are materialized into our world by the denizens of another. That's a quote from Jacques Vallée. That's what he got from Hynek. Now, Vallée's work has always left me a little bit dry, to be honest with you. But I think that I think he's worked in a particular line where he's allowed to kind of speculate in a certain area. But he is open to the idea that they're, you know, UFOs are something different than a nuts and bolts craft.
So do you feel like Jacques Vallée's work is incomplete?
There's something dry. It's not.
What do you mean by dry?
Yeah, it's not. It won't really lean into the investigation. It won't take the evidence as, you know, representing what it is. So I think what he tries to do is, you know, open up the possibility, but it's too, it's not going deep. It's staying on a surface level, just working and, you know, saying over and over again, well, I'm postulating this scientific theory about, you know, for me, if somebody gets too overly academic and stuck on it, if they're not willing to come out, even if they have, you know, some understanding that it's something bigger than just nuts and bolts UFOs, which I agree with. But I think the problem there is that we're not, you know, this is somebody who's not opening up. And they also seem to be working with a government academic track. A little more. Now, Hynek believed elementals or nature spirits were behind the UFO phenomena. That comes from Jerome Clark's UFO dictionary. Let's look at what Steiner had to say and what may have influenced Hynek in relation to this. So there is a series of lectures called Steiner, The Elemental World and the Future of Mankind. Now, Steiner actually goes into elementals, and it's interesting because Casey, who we covered a lot in this program, he could see elementals. So he could see these nature beings. And what's interesting is he found very often that they were very unhappy with humanity for the type of environmental destruction that we were heaping onto the planet. And also for, you know, sort of treating their domain in a second-class fashion. So we're going to go into a kind of Steiner's cosmology of the elementals and how Ahriman figures into that. And in the back of our heads is going to be J. Allen Hynek and the UFO file, and then what they're trying to do now with the UFO file. That trickster element involved in the middle of all this, but also the mystery school understanding that there are other beings operating side by side in the same sort of psychic space, shall we say. Quote, "We shall rediscover the elemental beings contained in everything of a solid earthly nature. The outstanding characteristic of these elementals begins dwelling in solid earth. Their characteristic is cleverness, cunning, slyness. In fact, a one-sidedly developed intellect. Thus, the solid earth element live spiritual beings of an elemental kind who are very much more clever than human beings." That's interesting. "Even a person of extreme astuteness intellectually is no match for these beings, who, as supersensible entities, live in the realm of solid earth. One could say that just as man consists of flesh and blood, so do these beings consist of cleverness and super cleverness. Another of their peculiarities is that they prefer to live in multitudes. When one is in a position to find out how many of these astute beings a suitable earthly object contains, then one can squeeze them out as if from a sponge, in a spiritual sense, of course. And out they flow as an endless stream. But counting these gnome-like beings is a difficult task." Now, Steiner is giving us something unusual here in this discussion. The topic is unusual enough, but to hear how Steiner is bringing in counting into it. This is a mystery technique, and I'll keep going. I'll explain some of it as we go. One, two, three. If someone would try to count them as cherries, one, two, three, one soon notices that they will not be counted that way. When one has reached, say, three, then there are suddenly a lot more. When one has reached three, there's a lot more, so counting them as one would on the physical plane is of no use, nor is there any other form of calculation, for they immediately play tricks on you. Think of how we rely on mathematical digital formulas for everything. So what Steiner is saying is that these beings play completely outside the realm of any physics that we understand. Suppose one put two on one side and two on the other in order to say that twice two makes four, one would be wrong, for though they're through their super cunning, they would appear as seven or eight, making out two times two makes eight, or something like that. Thus, these beings defy being counted. It must be acknowledged that the intellect developed by man in recent times is very impressive, but these super intelligent beings show a mastery over the intellect even when it is merely a question of numbers. Now, And we're going deep into Steiner's ability to penetrate into these spiritual worlds and see these things the same way that Casey was able to do, and the same way that fascinated Hynek when he was dealing with the UFO topic. If you go a little bit deeper with this, what Steiner says is that this dark astral force, Ahriman, is attempting to bring these beings onto his side as a block to humanity. And the basic pitch is, I can keep control of these beings and we can work together, you know, to kind of keep mankind in a certain place. And now, in Steiner's cosmology, he's saying, in fact, that if this happens, that humanity would be in a position where it would no longer be able to evolve. So he places a great deal on the importance of these unseen beings. Keep the UFO file in mind as we go. Yes, what do you got?
Some people are mentioning the machine elves.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. That's right, exactly in line with this. And I think it is important to remember when we get into AI and things of this nature that, you know, that whole kind of ghost in the machine piece, it represents a tremendous temptation for beings who are above us, shall we say. Let's do a little more on this, and they're linking in with Ahriman. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is Ahriman Goes Mainstream, and this is kind of a prelude to going deep into the Ahriman subject. We're going to be taking your questions in part two of this. It's a little bit later. So we'll get through about another half hour of this report, and then we'll do questions. How's that?
Sounds good.
These elemental beings will gather together, form a kind of union, and place themselves under the leadership of supreme intellectual power, Ahriman. If it should happen that the elemental beings come under the guidance of Ahriman with the clear intention of opposing human evolution, then mankind would be unable to make further progress. The possibility would arise that the Ahrimanic powers in union with the elemental beings would divert the earth from its intended course. Now, let me give you a little bit of anthroposophical background on this. We are on a trajectory as humanity, a kind of a spiritual evolutionary track. And in the background there, we're creating a new sphere. And the sphere in Steiner's world is called New Jupiter. And along the way, you know, we go through number of transitions and evolutions. That spiritual evolution moves through, in anthroposophy, reincarnation. It moves through the planets and all these different things. Now, the obstruction is that Ahriman has created this eighth sphere environment. And the idea is when we leave the earth, we get trapped in the eighth sphere because our life is filled with so much illusion that is being generated by Ahriman. And so through the advent of Ahriman's power in the 21st century, we're supposed to be completely severed scientifically from our spiritual awareness. This began, it started in earnest in 1840, and it sparked all these conversations in the mystery schools saying, we're going to have to let some of this out, because if we get a century, you know, 50, 100 years out, you're not going to recognize humanity because this wave is coming in, this materialism wave. And we see it all the time where people will blow off even the deepest spiritual inspirations as impractical, you know. And it's interesting, a lot of the mindsets that come up in a period like this, and we're seeing kind of the real ebb, the real low of humanity coming into this period. But it has the possibilities to be converted into an incredible upswing in humanity's evolution. So that's the kind of knife's edge that we're balanced on. This is what Steiner is getting us to with the challenge towards Ahriman. So when Steiner is saying our entire Earth evolution can be stopped, what he's saying is if enough of humanity builds, goes into this fantasy realm of the eighth sphere and creates this virtual reality realm, it's normal developmental course of developing into New Jupiter in this period in between, you know, where we develop from here and in these stages, what he calls Vulcan warmth stages, to create the New Jupiter. Now, it's interesting because there are echoes in the Bible of things like New Jerusalem. And when we're getting into Steiner's work, we're looking at somebody who's looking at things directly from the spiritual realm. So, you know, some of the concepts get quite far out and cosmological. However, they always seem to have this root back into something very, very traditional. And that's the interesting echoes. So you have Steiner kind of letting these things out as we go. Now, what I want to point out about Rudolf Steiner is that he himself was a natural psychic clairvoyant when he was growing up, and he didn't realize what was going on. One of the things that happened with him was he saw a deceased relative when he was 11, and she came to him, you know, in this highly emotional state. And he went back to his parents and said, "Oh, I saw Aunt so-and-so, you know, and all this." And it turned out later that she had, you know, this very unfortunate death, and she had appeared to him. Well, he had this ability through his entire childhood to see things that weren't there in the physical realm to other people. And this is something you'll also notice in the Casey work. We get something very significant. So the vision reaches outside of the normal piece. And so when we get Steiner looking into Ahriman, and, you know, we get him looking out into these spiritual realms, we're talking about somebody who has a vision, a gifted vision, and they're trying to relate that back. I remember when somebody went to Casey for a reading and they asked him, "Well, what about Steiner's version of Atlantis? Like, you know, in his book, Cosmic Memory, is it correct?" You know? And Casey said, "Yes, it's correct. But it's correct also on a trend." What it is, imagine somebody going in there and reading that Akashic record. And this is what he derives out of. This is his point of view on it. So, you know, Steiner has the ability, and it's just him filtering through his own kind of genius to get that information to us. Now, what we get in the back and forth with the Ahrimanic powers is that Ahriman is increasing in power as we go into this period of the 21st century. And what we get from Steiner's work is that he's lifting himself in through the technology and using, and again, using the anthroposophical model, Ahriman is attached, you know, he has attached himself to the earth and the evolutionary track that the earth is on. So everything that we're in the midst of, you know, the development of atomic energy, the, you know, material, rational thought, things of this nature, things that are overly grounded in materiality, things that separate us from any kind of spiritual comprehension. This is the force that's coming in to the evolutionary path of humanity and creating this. So then the question becomes, how do we get out of this? And what is the nature of this Ahrimanic thing? Is how does it play into the technological piece? And what about technological clairvoyance that Steiner is getting at? That Ahriman, that's the next stage of what he's going to give humanity. And everyone's going to be lining up and saying, "Well, you know, I wasn't so great before, but now with this Ahriman clairvoyance, I can do it." That's the big trap that's coming. And have you noticed through the technology that not only are they listening, and so if you say something offhand, suddenly it shows up in your Twitter feed or somewhere else. Not only that, but now let's start to get into the idea that when you think something, how often is this happening to you? You think a thought, and I'm not talking about normal synchronicity, because a lot of people in the ideas room probably have that, but you think something and then, boom, it's coming in to you as an ad or something of that nature. There is a lot of thought at this point that they may already have developed the ability to read us, not so much read our minds really, but to read us through our activity and that track of that history of activity that's available to them online, basically since these systems kicked in. If they have those digital tracks laid out, what does it represent? And what is the threat involved for us? Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is a special report. Ahriman goes mainstream. But who is Ahriman anyway? What was Steiner trying to tell us in relation to that? How does the AI, artificial intelligence aspect of the 21st century, mixed with this eighth sphere piece and the UFO file fit together with that. That's what we're getting into tonight with some very special background. We're going to be taking your questions in the second half of the broadcast here, maybe in about 20 minutes. We'll start those. Before I go any further, Miss Olivia.
Judith Brock says, William Bulman from the Monroe Institute tells us to direct our consciousness to our higher self so we don't get trapped in a consensus reality as one solution. Where would Christ fit into this? I mean, ultimately, would Steiner say that he is the solution for our plight against Ahriman?
Yeah, it's very interesting. And the higher self thing is tricky too. Higher self means different things to different people. So there's a language problem with a lot of spiritual topics. We'd have to all agree on every determination of what a higher self is. But I think, you know, you could say as a general thing, yeah, you want to be your best self, your most informed person. The Christ part in all this, it's interesting because Steiner, a little bit differently than some of the spiritual traditions, he is kind of like, you have to go out and battle, like, you know, this Ahrimanic thing, you need to kind of take it on head on, and then you can take the qualities of Ahriman for Christ. So that's a very interesting aspect around this, which is you have the relationship of these other beings that have locked themselves into the evolution of the earth and humanity, and how we, you know, go about doing that and how we go about facing off against them is significant for all of humanity. And this is the kind of stunning part, which is everything that humanity does is wrapped up in the evolution of the earth. So, you know, we hear a lot about, Steiner makes this point, that when they measure things, that they'll go over and say, well, you know, there was a comet strike, and that maybe is what moved a landmass at such and such a time. But Steiner goes directly to the humanity period of Atlantis and says, look, you know, it was the people of Atlantis who caused that destruction. It may have been in conjunction with things that were happening, but it was their activities. It was their level of being. It was their vibration, as it were, that set up the destruction with the two-eye stone and the technology that they had. That we've done a number of shows on that. But what I want to get at is, you know, Casey and Steiner talk about our impact and the way we think and the way we act around things in relation to the nature of earthquakes, for example, and to the nature of meteors, and to the nature of all these different things. So we understand them a little bit differently, that humanity has a much more significant place in their activities, if that were measured, than anything else. So, you know, if you removed humanity from the equation, you might say, well, all these physical things would go on anyway. Well, in fact, humanity there is makes it totally different. And this is some of the wisdom that's contained in the mysteries that gets lost in the scientific, you know, like, hey, look, I can observe meteorological effects. You know, that's not a real answer. It's one side of, it's a physical expression of an equation, but there's a whole different piece going on right in the middle of all that. And so I think that the, you know, in Steiner's setup on this, you have Ahriman and Lucifer as the challenges, the, you know, the attempt to harvest humanity. And we see it all the time. Like when you get to the war piece, for example, it's pure Ahrimanic, you know, the way that it's described. It's always justified. There's always an intellectual rationale for the thing. You know, but what's happening in the background? All that life force going out. Well, who does that serve? Who's being harvested in those types of situations? So you're in an occult setup when you're dealing with the world and the world powers, and understanding that what inspires those groups and those peoples, it becomes very important, you know. And I think one of the things that Steiner put on the record that's so important was about Madame Blavatsky's battle with the mystery schools here in America, because he says, well, you know, all those mystery schools, they were hand in glove with the political process here. And one of the things that they were planning to do to get her out of the country was to use the political process against her to say she violated the Constitution in some way because she was from Russia, you know, and this was all because she was a threat because she saw on the same level and knew the same things that they did. So this idea that we need to see that these groups are involved directly with the balance of power and government, and that what they're moving us toward now with the totalitarian AI squeeze on humanity, this pure Ahriman technique. And so if we are aware of Ahriman as it comes in, we have a totally different relationship to this idea. And that's what Steiner, you know, I'm fond of saying in relation to Steiner, when we get there, that Steiner spent four decades of his life basically trying to tell us about this dark astral force coming through the technology. And in particular, that period of the 21st century that we're in now. Now, what's fascinating also about this is, you know, I say it a lot, but I embrace the technology. I've been involved with technology in some sense, you know, for the past couple of decades. And, you know, that for me, I think the technology is a wonderful thing. It's all in how we get to that place of using it properly. And, you know, that comes even to simple choices. You know, we can see that some people get really addicted to video games, or some people waste their lives, you know, in online gambling or porn or whatever it happens to be. But, you know, that's just a choice of what you do with the technology. There's probably, you know, as we found out through investigation, there are entrainment technologies that make you fodder for that. And so you kind of enter into the eighth sphere when you're in those realms, when you've lowered your consciousness. Drugs make you go into the eighth sphere as well, using these anthroposophical terms. Let's now go to Steiner's version of the eighth sphere here to get a little more on this. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist, Ahriman Goes Mainstream, Eighth Sphere UFO File. I have some very interesting examples of Ahriman going mainstream before we finish today as well. If you're new here, especially, I'm going to remind you, sign up for the newsletter. That's a free newsletter, and it keeps us in touch together, especially going forward. It's going to be crucial because the censorship is ramping up, and going into the 2024 election, it's going to be off the charts because this guy, Bobby Kennedy Jr., they do not want him out there talking about the CIA assassinating President Kennedy or the pandemic and the people behind it and Fauci and all the rest, or, and the list with Bobby Kennedy goes on and on. And we've also seen them not be very happy with President Trump either. And as that goes through and we're reporting on it, they're going to try to squeeze the lanes of how people get this information. So make sure that you're on that newsletter, and also make sure that you stand up and be counted. If you want to support the program and get behind the work that we do here, subscribe and, you know, get extra content, get content early, and all the wonderful things that we have coming up for subscribers this year. This is going to be a very good year for Dark Journalist subscribers. Miss Olivia.
Well, I mean, I could just take over the show right now. So let me just ask.
Uh-oh. It's the Olivia
Steiner,
show.
Does Steiner have specific exercises, simple exercises, universal exercises in order to connect with the inner Christ? Like, what would his advice be to detoxify the negative and bring in the positive to align ourselves properly?
Well, Steiner's prolific. I mean, there's so much of that. So even in Knowledge of Higher Worlds, there are techniques and exercises. There's exercises, whether you're dealing with theosophy, Steiner's work, the Casey work, or the Gurdjieff methods. And they all lean back toward this self-awareness piece. Steiner's work in particular is more cosmic. It's more connecting in. You're kind of merging in with the spirit of nature, the spirit of the cosmos, and things of this nature. But I think what's interesting about Steiner is because he was a mystic, but he was also a scholar, that his ability to articulate very precisely what's happening is one of the strange advantages. And it's fascinating because I've always felt that Blavatsky had this incredible natural ability to engage spiritually. But and her, the information she brings forward is remarkable and changes everything. However, I don't think in terms of being able to articulate it, she came near to what Steiner was doing. Let's remember something else about Steiner. Both Uspensky and J.G. Bennett, who came out of the Gurdjieff work, were that close to becoming Steiner students in that period. It just so happened that they both went into Gurdjieff, or in the case of Bennett, he went to study with Uspensky. So Steiner is the major kind of influence in this period. And I think that we can see now, a century later, just how well this material holds up. The question is, the Aramonic piece with the Eighth Sphere piece is so large, and it's so, you know, it requires us to really lean back over the course of history and over the course of spiritual interaction and spiritual beings and our own evolutionary track, you know, and how we got to be physical beings and things of this nature. So what I tend to do is say, you know, it's theosophy that brought in the mystery school, public mystery school track. It is Steiner who brought home all of the Aramonic piece and articulated that so incredibly well. And it's Casey who brings in, even though the other two certainly talk about it, but it's Casey who brings in the Atlantean piece and how important that revelation is for humanity. I have some quotes on the Casey side tonight that we'll get to as well. Miss Olivia.
I just wanted to say that since synchronicities are, you know, on trend today, I was watching Belinda Womack, and she's new to me, and but she has an exercise about violet light and about it, the cleansing and purifying energy and aligning energy of violet light to align ourselves with our higher self, our highest self, and to source energy into the archangels. And I'm wondering if Steiner ever said anything about violet light.
Well, he spoke so much about color, light. There's so much Steiner material that, again, I get the impression of five different people. Mm. You know, there are these certain individuals who come forward and I'm like, they basically are different individuals. And some of them have very interesting backgrounds when you trace them. And it makes you wonder, are you dealing with one person? Morris Jessup is just such an individual. You know, he's an astronomy professor. He's an archaeologist. He's a UFO expert. But he also runs a coffee company in South America. You know, he's in Yucatan digging out these special ruins. There's something very unusual about the way that some of these people come in the aspects that they're associated with. But yeah, wow, is that really true? A little more about the elementals with Ahriman. If these beings, the elementals, are disregarded by man, i.e., if he does not turn to spiritual knowledge and the insight that what exists up in the sky is not merely the physical sun, but that with the sun's warmth and light, etheric beings stream down to earth, if man's comprehension stops at the external material aspect, then the possibility exists that these beings will unite with harmonic powers if we don't become aware of what we're dealing with. In order for the earth to become what is originally intended to become, humanity must wake up to the dangers that threaten from both sides, harmonic and Luciferian. On the other hand, the danger that those beings who dwell in the lower elements will join forces with harmonic powers, and on the other, that the Aramonic powers will unite with those of the higher elements in their striving for unity. This is a real danger. The significance of spiritual knowledge for man's earthly destiny cannot be emphasized too strongly unless man draws near to spiritual reality, something completely different from what ought to happen will happen to the earth. Think about that. No matter how far or how deeply our sophisticated sciences, physics, chemistry investigate the material world around us, the fact remains that what is investigated will all disappear along with the earth existence itself. This is the threat of the Aramonic force. That's the nature of what we're talking about. And it goes on, and you can find so much. Again, this particular lecture, the Ahrimanic Deception lectures, I think, are absolutely crucial. This one is the Elemental World and the Future of Mankind. Boy, does that send shivers through you when you read it. And the power of Steiner giving us that piece from his own observation and remembering his own humble beginnings with Annie Besant and the Theosophical Society giving him his own chapter in Germany, and that chapter just taking off and becoming wildly successful, and then him having to part company with the Theosophical Society because, you know, they were pushing Krishnamurti as this messiah, and Krishnamurti had no desire to be a messiah, but they had decided, hey, you know, a world teacher is coming, Blavatsky said, but she's not coming till the 21st century. I'll tell you what, we'll just do it all now. So this rushing, you know, we have to be careful. You might have the best people, you might have the best techniques, but if you rush things out of time, or if you do things at the wrong time, then you're looking at a totally different situation. Steiner is giving us in that period, look, we're going into the 21st century. If the mystery schools fail and anthroposophy fails, which he felt they did during World War I, the opportunity would open up again when? 100 years later. Well, that's the 2020. That's this whole period. So that opportunity, apparently, here we are again. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is Ahrimann Goes Mainstream. Let's do a little more on the Eighth Sphere piece. And then I'm going to show some of these very, very unusual examples of Steiner and what's gone on with Ahrimann and how Ahrimann is becoming now being put, moved into position, as it were. This is one of those kind of interesting things I found, someone putting Steiner there with his creation. By the way, Steiner carved that face to try to give us a sense of that heavy weight of the Ahrimannic force and that concretization, what he calls Ahrimann wants the world frozen into a heavy, deep freeze. And where Steiner is coming from, when he tuned in and when he was doing this sculpture, he gets these feelings of that he's working in rock, that he's in concrete. And that's the feeling, that's the heavy materialist feeling that he's getting from this work of interacting with this Ahrimannic force. And I think at a certain point, he said to him, he felt the life literally draining out of him. I want to say a couple of things about Steiner, that the Nazis were very big influence in that period. Their power was gaining, and they were so opposed to Steiner. And sometimes I get this question, well, was Steiner into Nazism? Well, since they burnt down his Goethe on him and, you know, chased him and all this stuff, my guess is that Steiner was not. And he doesn't speak fondly of any kind of nationalist movement like the Nazis in that period. And here's just a few key points on that front. Anthroposophy's influence continued to grow. So too did Steiner become a target of public attention and criticism when he proposed extensive social reforms through the separation of culture, politics, and the economy. Academic theorists, and then finally Hitler himself in an op-ed in a newspaper, verbally accused Steiner of being a tool of the Jews. Okay, so Steiner was getting targeted with this whole anti-Semitic piece. And, you know, that he was just a tool of this group. When he suggested provisional independence for the Upper Silesia area, which had been claimed by both Poland and Germany following the war, he was deemed a traitor to Germany. And the same year he brought the Waldorf methodology to the UK, a group of attackers let off smoke bombs, turned off the lights, and rushed the stage. Another one of the lectures in Munich, Steiner escaped safely, but his next lecture tour was canceled due to safety concerns. On New Year's Eve of 1922 and 23, the Goethe on him was also destroyed by fire. Steiner knew it was arson, and the Nazis had targeted him. Now, what's interesting is Steiner himself, when he dies by poisoning. And he doesn't want this to be part of the record of what he's done, put out there. But it's, well, you know, this young anthroposophist who experienced it with him, that he went to one of these tea engagements and he's dealing with all these people. And there was a black magic group which targeted him and set him up to poison him. And then he survives for a short period of time. But he, during the poisoning, he goes to this young anthroposophy student and says, basically, take me to the doctor. I've been poisoned. So this is something that's on the record about this. And what I would say when we're looking at Steiner is he sacrificed a great deal to bring across his message. And that these groups, the real left-hand path black arts groups, were opposed to him and ultimately removed him and removed the Gertian. The Gertian was rebuilt later in the 1930s. And it's there right now in Switzerland today. So we have that legacy of ideas. But I want to say that this is somebody who had the courage of his convictions. And so ideas of him being some kind of a nationalist or racist or any of that is just modern nonsense, because mostly the powers that be and the media are upset with the Waldorf schools, because the Waldorf schools, you know, it's not an easy track. You're not going to lock those parents down. You know, you're not going to do all these things with their kids. And, you know, you're not going to have drag witching reading hour and things like that with Waldorf parents. So this thing in the media needs to figure out a way, how can we target these people? So the only thing they can do is go after him and say, well, Atlantis is a racist concept. So anything that they don't like is racist. We need to be aware of this, though, because these are real challenges that these people face on the ground. And during the pandemic, boy, they were a major target. So keep that in mind. And I hope that that answers that for anyone. All right. Couple of weird things. I guess the whole thing is weird. I want to get these, there's not enough time to do all of them, but I want to get a couple of these things on the record about the eighth sphere, so we understand the nature of the virtual reality realm that Ahriman seeks to be supreme. And then I'm going to show this modern push around Ahriman, and then we're going to go to questions.
How's okay, that? Sounds good.
So a little over time, but hey, we're hanging in there. I want to remind everyone also that we're doing a very important X-Series 150 episode next Friday. And that's going to be, I've got 4 hours worth of material. I'm either going to do two shows Friday and Saturday night, or just do one big mega blowout show next Friday. So make sure you mark your calendars for that. We want to see everyone there to celebrate that information with you. And that is a very special piece of information. This is a nice setup for it. Okay. Steiner writing about the eighth sphere. In order to have some inkling of facts relating to the eighth sphere, let's keep following in mind in the course of its regular evolution. And he goes into how these different spheres are developed during the period of earthly evolution. And what happens at a certain point is the harmonic forces come in and they start to take away from our natural evolution. So they create an artificial pathway for this eighth sphere. He says, now in talking about this, there's a whole kind of cosmology around anthroposophy that basically is, we have the old moon and the old Saturn, and neither are there anymore, but they were the original setup for how humanity got rolling, just like there's going to be new Jupiter and all the rest. So what he says is, the Luciferic and Ahriman spirits are at work, and they hold back for themselves something of the old moon substantiality. They wrest it away, as it were, from the spirits of form who are developing in this period. This is how we get the Earth. The fact that Lucifer and Ahriman do so is indicative of their essential nature. Thus, as Sphere 3 is advancing the Earth to a further stage, something is wrested from the spirits of form by Ahriman. Into this part that is wrested away, Lucifer and Ahriman penetrate, instead of the spirits of form. The spirits of form become humanity. The activities of Lucifer and Ahriman are added to those of the spirits of movement. As a result, eight arises out of three. The eighth sphere arises out of the third sphere. In the track of humanity that's being set up on the earth, this other thing, this artificial eighth sphere, comes out of the third sphere. Something else then must be there, not merely the old moon. The something else which comes out into being as well is constituted by the fact that mineral substantiality, as it comes into being, is wrested away from humanity at the moment of the birth of the fourth sphere. Lucifer and Ahriman have snatched away imagination. Instead of Earth arising from the remaining old moon, a cosmic body takes shape whose birth is due to the fact that the substantiality wrested from the Earth is made into what was now come over from the old moon. Now recall what I have described the conditions pertaining to the old moon in the book Esoteric Science. In the old moon, there was nothing mineral. Had mineral substance been present, that world body would have been on Earth, not the moon. Sphere four comes into being through the birth of the mineral element. In that Lucifer and Ahriman approach, they snatch mineral substantiality out of sphere four and infuse it into sphere three. The old moon is recapitulated, but now with materiality that belongs properly to the earth. Densified imaginations are thus created. This creates the world of specters through Ahriman. Now, so what he's saying here basically is that in the setup, in the evolutionary track of humanity, Ahriman and Lucifer get involved. And what they do is they interfere in the natural peace, and they create an artificial realm out of this real thing. So that's how deep and how old this situation with the eighth sphere is. The problem is the advent of the technology is bringing all this to a major point. And this is what Steiner is predicting for us going forward, that the ability for them to take humanity into this fantasy realm of the eighth sphere is largely magnified through AI, virtual reality, and all the things, you know, the whole metaverse thing. You're walking around in the eighth sphere. Now, this is the crucial piece about where we find ourselves in the middle of all this. Now, in terms of solutions, again, it comes down to that individual awareness. But understanding what it is, you know, the crucial aspect, I would say. So the last piece of this, the earth as the fourth sphere and the eighth sphere interfering. In truth, therefore, our earth, the fourth sphere, is simply not what it appears outwardly to be. Were it really to consist of atoms, all these atoms would still be impregnated by formations belonging to the eighth sphere, which are perceptible only to visionary clairvoyance. These formations are present everywhere. So too is the specter-like content of the eighth sphere, which can therefore be perceived just as the actual specters are perceived. Lucifer and Ahriman, needless to say, they want to have humanity. They want to detach from the earth and go its own way in the cosmos together with Lucifer and Ahriman. So, in order to form their eighth sphere, which then, when it is sufficiently advanced, will be detached from the earth and go its own way in the cosmos together with Lucifer and Ahriman. Needless to say, the earth would then pass over into new Jupiter as a mere torso. This is all this is all very advanced stuff. Here's the thrust of what he's giving us. He's saying that this is their plan, and this is the, when we get into the harvesting of humanity through government powers, when we get into the harvesting of humanity through religious dogma, when we get into the domination of humanity through these various, central banks and things like this, the root of it is a cosmological connection to these Ahrimanic powers, the Luciferian powers in the eighth sphere, and that this is all sort of coming to a head. We've discovered, while we're in the middle of all these dominations, information about the banking system, information about the deep state, information about religious corruption and things of this nature. And what's happened is, just as they're completing their plan of the eighth sphere, we're waking up to what's happening. And so the battle then is between the process of that awakening on their completion of what they're doing and our completion on our side of waking up and stopping it. So this is where the battle of Ahriman. So you get a little taste of the Ahriman eighth sphere battle through this show tonight to get an idea of what it is he's talking about and what they're bringing forward. Now let's talk about the strange presence of the Ahrimanic piece around Elon Musk and around this whole AI transcendent transhumanism piece. They are in fact the same thing. So Ahriman is in fact that transhumanist piece because he's embodying just the science. He's embodying just the material aspect and he's breaking off the spirit. And so many of these scientists, what is it that they do after all? They are looking to place their consciousness inside of a cyborg that is immortal so that they can be immortal like gods without going through any of the tree of life spiritual challenges in order to get there. They're climbing up some other way, as it were. And this is the nature of what's going on in the background there with the scientific piece. So we need to kind of keep that in mind as we go. So I'll show some of these and then Miss Olivia, your questions.
Sounds good.
How's the temperature out there?
Such great questions. So much wisdom. I'm always impressed by the ideas room. Poppy Kapu says, I believe Ahriman is the puppet master behind people like Musk and others using AI to bring in the melding of humans and machine.
Oh, that's really true. Yeah. You know, I think what we need to understand is that somebody on that level, again, they're not operating as an individual. So when they do things, whether it's take over Twitter or whatever, it's not their own whim that's doing it. They're being given instructions. They're being given information. And I think once in a while, like the celebrity thing, if they go off the reservation, they get punished. You know, I remember when he said a few things that were out of turn and it looked like he had a step down from the leadership of Tesla. He lost all this money. You know, they're standing there willing. I remember when, you know, they had Jack there running Twitter and all this stuff was happening where all these groups were getting together on Twitter and politically it was a nightmare for the Davos crowd and for the Bilderberg group and Bilderberg's meeting, right?
This weekend.
Yes. And there's AI is big on their agenda. But, you know, basically what they said to these guys was, we don't care how you change this election. You know, you can't come up here to the next Davos meeting and, you know, having failed at this mission, you know, forget it. We'll throw you in a sex scandal. You wouldn't believe the stuff that we'll do to you. So then you have Twitter doing all this weird stuff, banning the New York Post, you know, banning the Hunter Biden laptop, all this nonsense. So that's how they control things. And they the punishment that is in store for people on like the Zuckerberg level, if they don't deliver for these people, you know, they're lost in terms of anything that they can do independently. Musk has presented himself as an independent and a maverick and all this stuff. But his choice of the World Economic Forum woman as CEO is a dead giveaway that all that is bunk, you know, prove me wrong, as the meme goes. But for me, I do feel that he is an important transit point in all this because he's there to make AI and Neuralink and things of this nature fashionable. And he's saying, look, within a year, we're going to have these chips for your brain. You know, that's not, you know, someone on that level is not a freedom fighter, you know, hardly. So, you know, we need to get real about that, but also, you know, see that on the level that he's at, he's not really even an individual who we can rank his actions. He is the sum total of whoever is running the richest man in the world, quote unquote.
The Philip K. Dick Film Festival says Musk has deep ties with China.
Oh, no question. I mean, look at his kind of role model for the X, which is the everything app that's going to run your life, is WeChat. And, you know, we know that those are social controls. So if this guy is so interested in free speech and constitutional life, then he's not going to have anything to do with the CCP. But unfortunately, that's not the case. A couple of weird things, a couple of ancient things to keep in mind. This is that Montaigne Tarocchi and the original Italian tarot deck from the 15th century. And that is the depiction of, quote, the angel with the eighth sphere. Just to give us some inference of that, there's a female version of it as well, which I found interesting. Same deck. Again, that deck unusually belonged to the upper echelon in Italy. And it was used not only for divination, but it was used to create aspects and attributes in people. And one of the things that I want to plug in about Ahriman too is that when you go into, it's interesting that Steiner chose this, and also that we're in this kind of AI realm. You know, when he's coming up with things like the eighth sphere, if we start to put those pieces together, boy, this is quite a puzzle. But in the Zoroastrian tradition, whenever they got around to writing Ahriman's name, they would always write it upside down. Now that's interesting too. And I think it gives us some inference that, you know, they're very aware of the nature of this thing. They're trying to tell us that whatever it is, it's got an opposite charge from humanity. Mm. And that's sort
like
of
antimatter.
Exactly. It's one mm-hmm. of those leftovers. All right. So we talked a little bit about Grimes last week. It's a very interesting singer. I have some stuff I'm going to get to about her because of her involvement in this Ahriman movie. And, of course, her close relationship and having these children with Elon Musk and all the rest. There's a game out there, and this Xbox game, it's fascinating because they have all of this material in there. I'm going to read about the game, but first I want to show you some key characters in there. This is the Ahriman figure in the game, and it's a flying eyeball. But the character with it is using that kind of classic pose that they have all the celebrities do to show their allegiance to the Illuminati. And this is fascinating too, because there's absolutely no reason for that pose there except to identify it completely.
Wow.
Now, you know how I feel about the Illuminati thing in general. It's a real thing, but we have a kind of a superficial understanding in the general culture about it, in the general kind of internet reality around these things. I don't think that, you know, everything is an Illuminati piece, but those hand signals are definitely, you know, so across the board that you can't miss it. And I think sometimes people who aren't dealing with it do it anyway, just to be like, you know, this is part of the weirdness. But nonetheless, the covering one eye is part of those things. It's just like the secret handshake. And there's a number of things. I want to recount an unusual thing of how I learned that there were mystery school or secret society meetings at MIT. I've told this story before, but, you know, one of the things that this student journalist that I knew, we'll call her H, that she showed me a secret passage that was in MIT. This is a long time ago. Now, the way that she did it was a choreography. And part of the choreography was the way that she waved to the people. Under MIT, there's this large heating thing, and there are people who run that and who just kind of do maintenance and things like of that nature. And so her hand signals to them let them know that she could come in there. Then the next thing is she went through a whole physical choreography, including sliding through pieces in the wall that seem so thin. And she literally just said to me, all you have to do is do everything that I do. So I imitated everything that she did, and I went right along with her. And it was such an unusual feeling to have her know this thing. And it was almost like she was doing it was like a moving dance routine to get to this thing through doors, you know, through very thin places in the wall, you know, all this stuff. And then we finally get there and it's this very large room where they all meet. And the walls, you know, some of the walls were painted red and had all these kind of interesting symbols on them. A lot of them were symbols that were scientific. And, but the nature of her hand signals and the way that she moved showed me that in whatever club that she had gotten into in MIT, all that stuff was very much alive. So when we get to, you know, the celebrities at that level, using hand gestures and identifying marks and all the rest of it, that's a very real thing. And it should be taken very seriously, although there are always, you know, things that go over the top. Now, that is, of course, this incredible compilation of these Illuminati hand signals. And I think that these gestures are important because you see them across the board on for these music stars and for these really major actors and actresses. So when we see it embedded in the game, instantly, you know that we're into some oddness. Now, some of the kind of original, I found some of the original drawings of this thing, the flying eyeball, again, that's there. That's Ahriman in the game. Well, I'm going to tell you other weird things about the game and Ahriman as we go here. Actually, I have another representation of this I want to show. Here again, in a later version of the game, it's an eyeball and it's got some very, very interesting collection of attributes. So whoever's putting this stuff together, you know, they're aware, at least on some level, of what's going on there. Now, here's the thing that in the game, the abilities that Ahriman has, I'm going to read this. He's, in this case, it's from Final Fantasy X, and he's encountered at Mount Gagazet, which is Gaza, Giza is in there as an anagram. It is the same model as the floating death. Ahriman uses two magical attacks, ultrasonics generated with its wings, and a gaze generated from its eye that will hit one party member for less damage, but will cause confusion. It's also psychic. It uses the psychic abilities. So these are the attributes in the game of Ahriman. Check this out. Now, the items that he steals, this is what he's out to get. Are you ready? It is Musk X2 and Musk X3. Those are the actual attributes of what he's after. He needs to get Musk. And he needs to get Musk X2 and Musk X3. So someone who constructed this out, and it's, you know, the game has been going for a while, but someone who constructed this out left some sort of a trail in here. Weapon abilities, piercing, fire strike, lightning strike, water strike, ice strike, magic, armor abilities, confuse ward, far plane wind, gaze, ultrasonics, and the items that he steals, Musk X2 and X3. So think about Musk and think about the things that we've been talking about in relation to Ahriman, and think about a game that's been developed, which is so popular with all these people playing it, that's been around for years, and that the character Ahriman needs to get this Musk in order to keep going. There are also unusual hand signatures around Ahriman, as we've pointed out before. That's Ahriman in Steiner's sculpture, and there's something, again, very unusual going on in relation to the hands. All right, those are games. What kind of games does Ahriman play? This is an interesting question. Now, there's a series of movies about Godzilla, which we all know has been going on. Uh-huh. Of course, Godzilla and Kong is one of them. But interestingly, in one of those Godzilla movies, and Godzilla is kept in a pen, you know, in the hot zone, and gets out. And in one of those movies, what happens with Godzilla is he's at Fenway Park in Boston and he flips out and he's like, you know, letting loose. I find that interesting just because, you know, I know Fenway Park, and for me, it was an interesting place. I was like, I wonder what they're getting at with their Boston connection. Now, inside the movie, and someone was very helpful to get a screen snap of this for us, inside the movie, Godzilla versus Kong, they have this character of a conspiracy theorist, and they're showing, as you know, as he's talking along, they're showing this picture of his room that he's in. And in there is the screen snap of Incarnation of Ahriman. And if you go further, there's another snap of the Ahrimanic Deception, which is the name of the lectures that Steiner gave about this whole piece. Again, you know, you have reflections there of somebody in the background in Hollywood being very tuned in on this, shall we say. What the message there might be is a good question, because the Godzilla thing and what they're weaving into it, just like Captain America, you know, there are a lot of interesting pieces that they're putting together about our future and how it's going to go, as it were, which leads us to this unusual story that we covered last week about Grimes and Ahriman. Now, just a couple of things about Grimes. I've already done the disclaimer that, you know, this is not about her, you know, being a evil genius or anything like that. What it is directly relates to this idea of her being involved in knowing people who are associated with this Ahriman thing. Because the Ahriman religion, by the way, they have very, very interesting members and churches and all kinds of things, much more than you would imagine. But the Grimes Death Before Dying thing, this is an independent movie, and they were able to use her song and her image for it. And when we think about the kind of choices that she made in her own life, you know, being with Musk and everything of this nature, and him being, you know, so close to this transhumanist piece and really heavily associated with Neuralink and all the rest of it, and AI, by the way, XAI is his latest company. And we have these whole, you know, kind of cyborg characters being rolled out on this, but they also have him as, oh, he's the guy who's warning against it while he's doing it. You know, we need to kind of understand the nature of the people who are in the arena and what's going on there. There's more of that wonderful eye stuff from Katy Perry. I think that some of these directors and people play into it now that they know that it's out there. But in other cases, I think with somebody like Katy Perry, they would be using this and controlling her because of the kind of massive star status that she has. But I think in the case of someone like Grimes, you know, she does have some unusual things in her background. One of the things about her being born in Canada is that her dad was associated with, you know, he's a major banker there, and she went to McGill, and McGill is all, you know, has the whole history of MK Ultra starts at McGill. No, not that she necessarily was in that program, but it opens up some unusual questions when we get Grimes in a movie about Ahriman and the fact that she's that close with Musk, and then Musk doing the X thing. If you feel like with the X series, you've been kind of walking into the twilight zone, boy, this is the year for it. So the UFO file, the X technography and technology, and now the Ahriman piece, all linked up together. I have more on this, but I'm going to get to your questions now. And that means Miss Olivia, you're up.
I guess Elon's nanny said that she was told that he was not the Antichrist, but that he would bring forth the tool for the Antichrist to take over. That is something to research. A whistleblower nanny. Bonnie Anderson says, could Ahriman be AI? Ivana says, do you think the AI is actually alien technology? And Tokra says, what pronoun does Ahriman identify with, or is it related to Baphomet?
Well, that's interesting about anything on that track, the Baphomet track, is Ahrimanic. So Ahriman Ahrimanic. You know, there's one central thing that resonates all of this out. Sorath is in, it's a sun, a solar demon. This is in the anthroposophical cosmology, but this is an Ahrimanic representation. So it's all Ahrimanic forces. There's a lot of different ones, but Ahriman is that central piece. And there's a weird story with it too, for what it's worth, which is that at a certain point, the moon was coming out of the earth, in that humanity was at its most exposed point. And that in that period, Ahriman comes in and locks himself in to the evolution of humanity. It's very interesting that he puts it in these terms. So by sort of coming into our own evolutionary track, now we're stuck with him to a point until we throw it off through our own awareness and realization. That thing, and how we've been kind of, you know, dogged over and over again throughout history with wars and rumors of wars and religious wars and everything else, there is some divisive element involved with humanity. And in this case, we have a cosmology. But it's interesting because Steiner's doing a lot of original things in bringing forward Ahriman from his spiritual vision. And we also know that Steiner is trying to help steer that evolutionary track for humanity. Whatever it is he's got in his mystical visions leads him to believe that that journey of humanity, just like theosophy, was created. The mystery schools had to come out. They were worried. They were worried about our evolutionary track. They saw the whole thing threatened that they had been working for humanity for. And the Essenes had brought forward Christ. You know, Essene means expectancy. They had developed a whole school of the prophets to bring forward this thing, and it had saved humanity. And here we are in the saved state, but the battle is with Ahriman. So they saw the threat and they saw the danger. And I think that we are kind of the living representation of that. And there's this awareness rising that among these mystery schools, as we pointed out on this program, they were aware of the real danger of societal collapse. And then in Steiner's case, he's actually putting it on the track of something could happen, you know, to the earth that is not supposed to happen. So, think off in the distance, you know, the use of atomic weapons was happening. He's looking out 100 years ago, and he's seeing into our century with his abilities, his clairvoyant abilities, and he's seeing, oh, this thing gets in, you know, gets in through the technology. And he's saying, well, there's a way to engage it, and there's a way to be aware of it and throw it off. So we can give it many different names, I think. And so the idea of that Baphomet being one of them, absolutely, yes.
Beata Soul says, DJ, Grimes' father now runs a biotech company that designs yes. RNA solutions for agriculture and medicine.
Yeah, I was just reading about it. Yep, it's quite fascinating.
B. Nichols says, Grimes is also a judge on some new transhumanism American Idol type show, too.
Yeah, that was weird. We went into this last week. And, you know, the idea that she would need to do something like that is kind of unusual, isn't it? Yeah, you'd only hope that somebody like that who is creative and, you know, has had this successful career and been a trailblazer would wake up and come out of that, you know. But it is interesting, the Elon part with her, and then looking at the Ahrimanic aspect, the X technology, you know, there's something here that is bona fide that gives me a lot of pause when I think about Musk, because I'm thinking that Musk may be the big Ahrimanic influence there. So somebody get a memo. Yes.
Could you talk for a minute about, I mean, what we're talking about is a global cult, transhumanist cult. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And there's an Epstein connection to all of this with.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Obviously, biotech.
Oh, no question.
And with entertainment. Do you want to connect those dots a little bit?
Well, I'm going to save my Epstein spiel for the 150. But I will say this, that they were involved, both Maxwell and our friend Epstein, they were involved with the eugenics program over here at Harvard, and they were funding various programs along this line. And they were engaging some of the best scientists, and nobody knows why. When we get into the hot zone, as we've put forward in episodes about Ghislaine Maxwell, and she, from her prison cell right now, could certainly tell us a great deal about it. But, you know, Epstein, it's not possible. What's interesting to me is there's a complete, including the fact that she used the name Janet Atlantis, as we brought forward, and that they were using scientists like Stephen Hawking, and they were going underwater in the hot zone looking at the kind of reincarnation of Belial through the Atlantean ruins. This is a very important piece for us to put together and understand in relation to it, because the whole idea of the resurrection of the Belial cult is that's all Ahrimanic force. So the names may differ again, but you're talking about the same thing. And for me, they were very advanced on the whole question scientifically. And of course, as we know, one of the people that they brought in, Marvin Minsky, was over at MIT, and he's the father of what? He's the father of artificial intelligence. So all those things add up. If you look at some of the things we brought forward about Alexandra Cousteau and how somehow Maxwell and Epstein, latched onto her, and through the testimony of some of these cases, like the Prince Andrew case, we found out that they had targeted Alexandra Cousteau. And then you think to yourself, okay, I understand them targeting, like, you know, Clinton or these other scientists. Alexandra Cousteau, she's somebody who's in charge of an ocean thing, but her grandfather was Jacques Cousteau. And Jacques Cousteau's quest throughout his life was to find Atlantis. How much did he know about what really takes place under the ocean, especially in the hot zone? That's where the story really heats up. So, yeah.
THP33, does Steiner say we need Ahriman evil to develop, to fully develop our Christ consciousness?
Yeah, it's a necessary showdown, because we are able then to take all these abilities, these intellectual abilities, from Ahriman while still remaining spiritual and whole. The other way is that it just envelops humanity. And that, you know, we become these kind of automatons. Now, what's interesting is you see a lot of people really promoting the Ahrimanic piece, where they're like, oh, hey, you know, life will be better. I'll have a chip in my head, and I, you know, it'll modulate my vitamin D. And, you know, they say the most ridiculous things. You as a human being can do all that stuff, you know, and the machine and the technological jump is, you know, it goes along with the whole Frankenstein story. The Frankenstein story let out and really created by the mystery schools to let us know this is not, you know, that's not the way. So keeping that in mind, I think, is crucial. Yes.
Happy Hermit 3D. is the Ace Sphere a fifth interval, an overtone of our humanity?
You know, it's interesting because Steiner's sketch of it makes it look like it's, he's got this, it's right beneath the earth. In some pictures, it's interlocked with it. It's fascinating the way that he has it. And that's what he put up. There is the eighth sphere. So the other spheres represent the developmental aspects of humanity. And that's the way that he went through it. Saturn, Sun, Moon. And then it takes you over here, Vulcan. Remember, that's something else too. That's the setup for new Jupiter. But who knows exactly what he's talking about there. Is that Planet X, or is that another sphere like the eighth sphere, which is not fully concretized into a planet? So there's a lot of questions about what it would be, but the idea that it is an artificial stage, so it's actually, its presence is kind of malignant. It's not supposed to be there. And Earth's evolution would actually speed up and go much faster if we weren't dealing with those influences. So therefore, you know, the eighth sphere represents a tremendous trap. It's a tremendous danger. So, you know, speaking of it in the anthroposophical terms, the eighth sphere is, you know, the realm of Ahriman. That's where he's most powerful. And I think what it represents, we talk about Maya and illusion and things of this nature, it's exactly the same thing that they're referring to. But suddenly, in the 21st century, we have the ability to create it on a certain level and to have people, you know, think. And we hear all about, oh, hey, I'm going to send my avatar. This is what Musk said. I'm going to put my avatar consciousness into a box, and then they're going to drop the box on Mars or whatever. You know, those people on that level, let me tell you, that they understand the mystery school setup of the physical body. And you have an endocrine system which generates your consciousness. You can't project your consciousness into a cube and drop it on a planet. So these are weird things, you know, and they do. They sound like soul traps. And I think that there has to be a metaphysical awareness around artificial intelligence. There can't just be, you know, oh, you know, I'm looking at the danger of AI, you know, rewriting history or something. You have to bring in the metaphysical. In the work of the X series and the things that we do here, we bring in the research, the deep research, but we bring in the psychic side, the mystical side. You can't do real research in this period looking at these things just on a dry technical level. That's why the UFO file thing doesn't work on that level either. You need a mystical perspective. You need a mystical point of view. You won't understand what's going on. So, you know, you get a lot of brilliant people talking about, oh, the dangers of AI. Well, I can tell you that they already had operational AI in 1982 and probably a lot further back, but we know that there's a 40-year glitch in any of this technology. So any of the conversations that are going on are just conversations for the public to have about it, including the whole back and forth of scientists saying, oh, it's dangerous, whatever. They've known that it's dangerous. They developed it anyway. And they had this conversation 40 years ago in their quiet scientific chambers. So, you know, there's a lot of theater. Just like when they did the UFO file hearings and they were like, oh, we don't know what this is, but, you know, we have to get to the bottom of it or it might interfere with our planes flying. Yeah, they've been looking for 80 years a crashed craft. I mean, come on. You know, they know, they don't know everything about it, but they already know a ton about it. And the idea that they're just novices who stumbled on this, you know, they've had UFOs flying with aircraft since we had the Wright brothers. Okay. They know a lot about it. Gee, I've never heard of a UFO crashing directly into a plane. There are maybe a few stories that suggest that, but it's pretty rare. Okay. So the idea that this is an aviation hazard isn't the problem. So, you know, they come in on all these kind of fool's errand angles. And that's just what, just like what Nolan came forward and said, well, because of the laws that we passed, you know, by tricking the public with the UFO threat thing to get a UFO office, well, now we get to see China balloons and things like that. It's complete bunk. The CIA people are trained liars. The counterintelligence people, Elizondo, you know, Nolan is really showing himself almost as good a liar in public as Elizondo. When you get counterintelligence people, that's what they're good at. And the CIA are the best trained liars on the planet. So that's who you want to get UFO disclosure from. This is the danger. This is how we can kind of go through this. Remember that the clairvoyance that Steiner is suggesting that Ahriman's going to bring through the technology, it's a techno clairvoyance, right? It's technological clairvoyance. That means that you have machines that will read your mind. This is what Steiner was giving us. And we know that we're really this close to them being able to do this. So we need to have enough of a relationship with our own psychic bodies, with our own psychic abilities, so that when that happens, we've got the real genuine thing versus the phony technological clairvoyance, which might be able to, you know, pick out what your favorite TV show is or whatever it happens to be, but doesn't have the deep abiding quality of real clairvoyance. So the more that we understand these things, the more that we apply the psychic line to traditional lines of research, the outcome will be a heck of a lot better. If we just stick to a nuts and bolts approach to things, you won't go anywhere. And that's why people, there are all these experts who speak, and they're really, it's great information in its own sphere, whether it's financial or technological or whatever. But if you don't have that larger mystical outlook about what's happening, you're missing too much of the picture. And, you know, since they're operating with their own version of left-hand mystery schools and things, the people who are the leadership, the people who are running things, then it represents a great danger. Yes.
David Tormina. DJ, if one were to equate the elemental beings of the Earth with the force-carrying particles of quantum physics, one might suspect that CERN and all the colliders are a form of communication device. Uh-huh. And Michael Snow says, is CERN a Belial group project?
Well, CERN falls into that category, does it not? CERN is was originally a nuclear agency, but they got into particle colliders. Particle colliders form the foundations of very early research, the Varian brothers and others. And it became an avenue for contacting other dimensions. So those groups that go in there with a physics idea, you know, there's another idea, just like we've seen around CERN Tarot. There's a deep occult abiding interest in that scientific group about what happens when you reenact, you know, the Big Bang and things of this nature. The ostensible purpose for something like CERN was to find the Higgs boson and, you know, how the world was created and all that stuff. It serves as a great cover for some of the more mystical black arts pieces that are going on in the background in relation to it. So yeah, it's an Aramonic project, but you know, it's interesting because I'm sure you can get fantastic, interesting results in scientific projects of that nature if your ideal were different. By the way, I found one of the earliest renditions of Ahriman that Steiner did in the Goetheanum. This, it actually, when they burned down this picture that Steiner painted of Ahriman, burned with it, but I found that one pretty interesting. That's one of the earliest renditions. Grimes, in her appearance in this independent film, you know, there's the whole sword thing, there's the whole piece of them using her in this fashion. The setup for Ahriman Death Before Dying, which is the name of the movie, like I said, is French Fantasy Film Festival on June 11th, is all about timelines turning. And, you know, you have in that trailer, which we put a link to the trailer in last week's episode, in that trailer, you have somebody who's like in the Middle East about to snipe somebody, and then it catapults back into like early Persian times. And there's a whole thing there about preventing the reincarnation of Ahriman, you know, and then there's another group bringing it in and all this stuff. Whatever that happens to be, her involvement and her presence in the midst of it gives us a signal that there's an Ahrimanic, direct Ahrimanic component to Musk and to the work that he's doing, and how they're setting him up in a sense to be a conduit to make this AI fashionable. And that is huge, you know, just an open invitation for that Ahrimanic piece to flow into humanity. So I think it's significant and it's something to really keep an eye on. Two more questions, Miss Olivia.
Two more.
That's it.
my voice is going giving out on me anyway.
It sounds good.
Okay. So Hizzo says they want to place their souls in machines because they know they can't get to heaven. And Troubadour 2 says, DJ, is Gurdjieff's Kundebuffer organ responsible for this deviation? What is the relationship?
Well, Kundebuffer is the great mystery in the Gurdjieff work. And it's an organ that Gurdjieff said humanity developed during a very difficult period. And it relates exactly, and I wonder if he got the story from Steiner, in fact, being aware of Steiner's materials, because we know in Beelzebub's tales, he speaks about Steiner, and he doesn't always speak about him in a positive fashion. But there, you know, there's that thing with Gurdjieff that he's hinting at things. But the Kundebuffer is an organ that we have, which makes us see things upside down so that we can kind of get through, you know, difficult, very traumatic things. It was developed and it's an artificial center in humanity that doesn't allow it to see things properly. Now, one of the things that both Uspensky and Gurdjieff studied were these incredible outbreaks of bizarre mental brainwashing that would take place before wars would happen, and how people could be turned from normal people, as we saw during the pandemic, into, you know, mask Nazis, or, you know, they'd want to roast somebody over the fire for not believing in the vaccine. So we've seen that they understood this quality, and they for sure, the leadership understands the quality, and they're planning, and they've been trying to use it in order to stoke passions of people against each other for things like civil war in the United States and elsewhere. So those groups are masters at dividing. And so the kind of genius of the Gurdjieff work is to work on this idea of the Kundebuffer, saying if we could engage this part of our minds, which gets overly identified with a cause, then we'd have some ability of avoiding the kind of heavy-duty propaganda brainwashing that takes place. You know, and they'd seen the Russian Revolution. They'd seen World War I, World War II. I mean, you know, these were people who were well-steeped in seeing what was being laid out. And they understood from their, you know, mystical level and intellectual level, like Steiner did, what these people were up to. Steiner pointed out over and over again that it was the schools, the mystery schools in the background that were operating, for example, the prime minister in the UK, that were operating the leadership in France, that were hand in glove with all of the political leadership in the United States. Right hand, good mystery schools, and really bad left hand mystery schools. And so this thing about awakening, it was funny because that whole thing with Gary Nolan that I laid out earlier is part of that CIA false disclosure. Well, here's a real true disclosure for you. In fact, if you dig into the subject enough, as you know that we have here on this program, and I've done it with you, you are the mystery school. Because when you think of what the Greeks held over their temples was know thyself. And so when you get right down to it, you know, we're seeking out a mystery school. You're actually seeking to go within because you're the mystery school and you are the mystery. So spend a little time with that one.
Ooh, I like that.
Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. It's been great to be here with you. Armon Goes Mainstream, AI, Eighth Sphere, UFO File, Special Report. And this one was special, going deep into the Eighth Sphere, Steiner and Armon. We're going to take your last question and then get ready for next week and X Series 150 because it's coming at you. I want to remind you, if you're new or if you haven't already, make sure you go to darkjournalist.com, sign up for our newsletter. And that's a free newsletter, but it keeps you informed and keeps you in touch and gets around all the censorship of, you know, will YouTube give you the notification or not? And we have some incredible things coming up for you, events, interviews, X-Series episodes, and you want to make sure you stand up and be counted and you're on the newsletter list. If you like the work that we do here, then subscribe to the site. We've made it very affordable for everyone. Get behind the work that we're doing. And we appreciate all the support that you give us. Miss Olivia, you're up.
Okay. Michael Snow. Is the showdown the result of eating of the tree of knowing good and evil? Salt of the Earth says, human beings must heal the shadow within and grow your own light. You are God. And Thomas Ball says, quote, the secret of the mysteries is this, Christ in you. Which is from Colossians 1.
Oh, yeah. There's no question.
What is this all about anyway? What is the origin of this? How did we get here? If this is the culmination,
tune in next Friday. No, absolutely, and I think it is the large question. So you could think of this as kind of the setup episode for going on to that level. But I will say that there's something very old in humanity, and that is the memory of Atlantis and the advances that took place there. I'm going to close the evening. There's two weird things I'm going to add here as we close out. And, oh, that's a shot of Grimes I found. Very interesting. I'm working on her for a video. But some of that imagery, absolutely far out. You know, there's a Casey piece I'm going to bring in next week. But before I do, remember that last week I was talking about Betty Hill, and Betty was very interesting. She lived in New Hampshire, and of course, she was the first to get abducted on the record with Barney Hill, her husband, and the whole kind of amazing story that took place there. And I made the point that the individual that she sculpted later didn't really look like a gray. And when she saw pictures of grays, she's like, oh, that's nothing like what I saw. These things were people. They just looked a little bit different and they were shorter and all the rest. Well, interestingly enough, Obama's production of Betty and Barney Hill's alien abduction story is due on Netflix this fall. Now, my question was, why is Obama behind it? Barack Obama's alien abduction movie may rope in a UFC veteran because she, in fact, is the granddaughter of Barney Hill. But why is Obama in this? Why are they using their Netflix ability to create this White Mountain alien abduction story? This is something that we need to track very closely because they're going to use Obama for the UFO op as well. And he's already kind of signaling that he's on board. And I find it a very unusual development, White Mountain. When I first heard about it, I was...
Yeah, like red flag.
You know it. Barack Obama and Netflix, as a continuation of their partnership, yeah, they gave him $50 million, are developing another production, including a former U.S., including the former U.S. President Barack Obama himself, with their Higher Ground Productions. As per TMZ, this new film is said to be called White Mountain. It's all about the first UFO abduction. Obama, the UFO file, Betty Hill. Yeah, very interesting. you know,
wait, when is that coming out? Or is it
this fall is kind of loosely. My guess is it'll take about a year to make. But interestingly enough,
it'll be timed just right, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. I'm actually going to save this is such an interesting Casey piece that I'm going to save it for our follow up episode. But I think with that, Miss Olivia, we're out.
Okay. Let me thank a bunch of super chatters.
Absolutely.
forgive me for my voice.
Yes.
Polaris 23, Bill Mayo, Gil and Joy R, Bobo the Clown, Terry Doherty, Wait a Minute 72, Doreen Hewitt, Global Atlantis, Nancy Mercier, Shane Walker, Sun Hero, Anunnaki, Christopher Lombardo, Doyle Wayne, John Folden, Moral Nomad, Melody Lenz, GDNPB, Number 6, Robert Scott, Philosoph, Brian Berner, Jay Parsons, Jonathan McIntosh, Happy Hermit 3D, Erica Swenson Elliott, Eurythmia is Fun, Susan Blackstone, Johnny Ricardo Bound, Philip K. Dick Film Festival, Bob Bindert, and Neurosurgery Highland. Thank you so much for your generous super chats.
Unbelievable. Thank you. And we really appreciate your support. And to all our subscribers out there, thank you for keeping us going so we can bring you these deep reports. We'll be back with you for X Series 150. It's a 4-hour extravaganza. It might be over two nights. We'll see if we can do it all in one night. But next Friday at 8 p.m. for sure, be there. And if anything is going on this week, we'll have a special report ready for you. In the meantime, have a fantastic weekend. And Miss Olivia?
I just, you know, Denise Bilby said, has DJ seen the baby pods for AI-enhanced babies in Germany? I haven't seen that yet.
Please send them anything of interest along the AI line like that. admin@darkjournalist.com. I would love to see whatever you have to send.
Shades of Gattaca.
Unbelievable. Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot that we need to awaken to about the AI aspect and not, you know, the hand-wringing that we're seeing in the media. Oh, will AI go too far? You know, like I've said, they've had the technology for 50 years. They know what it can do. So this is a false theater that they're doing, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with the actual reality. However, we can use that process that they're going through, just like the phony UFO disclosure that they're doing. We can use it to get at the real stuff. And I'm going to show you how. And I want to put this on the record again. The presidential campaign that gets on this UFO subject is going to have a tremendous advantage in 2024. Bobby Kennedy Jr. and the Trump campaign, both of those sides need, and I mean need, to get on that UFO file piece. This is happening and it's on. And the sooner that they get on it and make it happen, watch out, because this is what's going to make all the difference. So everyone, thank you so much.
One last question?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I did want to ask you this. So did Steiner fast at all? This is from Brian Fest. What
Steiner,
kind of physical purification?
Well, here's the thing. His doctor was warning him, Ida Wegman, and she, of course, is very holistic inclined. She was saying, oh, you know what you're doing? You're spending all this time in the spiritual realm. So you're checking out, and then you come back. And then you come to me and say, oh, I feel faint, you know, and all these things are going on. Then he said to her, this is the cost for the work that I do, that he knew it was going to take something out of him to be on that level. Just like with Edgar Cayce and the readings. You know, they said to Cayce, the readings source said to Cayce, you can't do more than two readings a day. It takes too much out of your Kundalini and your entire energy body, you know, the real etheric body. You can't do it. You can only do two. But when World War II was on, his mail was stacking up. And he psychically could read into all the questions and all the worries and all the things. And he was like, I'm going to keep doing it. And at a certain point, he was doing 12 readings a day. And the readings said to him, the source said, well, you're just going to burn yourself out. You know, you'll literally burn the motor of this physical vehicle out. So you can't do this anymore. And that's exactly what happened to him. So the similar thing was happening with Steiner. And I think they get on such a track that they want to do so much for humanity that they won't stop. And I think in Steiner's case, there was a lot of that too. And later in life, according to those accounts, he had less and less ability to go into the spiritual realm without the physical ramifications after the fact. But he probably still would have lived on through his 60s had he not been poisoned. So, you know, but I think that ability to sacrifice is there, but you have to be careful when you're dealing on that level of psychic interaction and psychic journeys and all the rest of it. And you have to be aware that, you know, just like those people that we see who are workaholics, they can burn themselves out. And if you're burning yourself out in a good cause, that's all very well and good, but it's better maybe if you can balance it out to make sure that you're around. I think in Cayce's particular situation, this was part of the, you know, of being Cayce. He was always giving things away to people, and it was always coming back to haunt him, but he was just a very naturally, incredibly giving person. And I think that he felt with the readings, he had something really wonderful to give to people, and he couldn't. shut it off, you know? So that is a very, very interesting story about Casey and what would happen in relation to that. He also had very unusual abilities to see auras and things of this nature, as I've told you. But in some cases when, you know, there was one story where he saw someone, this woman, and she didn't have an aura. And he said, don't get into a car today. And she got into a car and got into this tremendous car wreck and died, you know, so the life force had already apparently left. There's so many unusual things I think we can learn from the art of living with Edgar Casey. It's just absolutely phenomenal. So thank you, everyone. a couple of shout outs. Amber Davison, great job. Yeah.
So it's in the Bible, it's Lot, his family, yes, that's in Sodom and Gomorrah, right? Am I right,
yes,
about that? Okay. So Wayne Peake says...
Lot's wife looks back and turns into a pillar of salt.
That's what I thought. Okay. Wayne Peake says, our society has lost its sense of the sacred. And I just wanted to read that and say, you know, our society certainly has lost its sense of the sacred, but that doesn't mean we have to go along,
true,
with everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, it is, if anything, rather than getting caught up in their degradation and their corruption and their loss of the sacred, we instead should hold on to every bit of the sacred that we can muster within ourselves and really value it and treasure, yeah, it and cultivate it more.
Well, Gurdjieff, it's that wonderful line of Gurdjieff, which is, don't leave the world will leave you. that's a good one. That resonates with me. I can see that. What is this one? DJ, do certain schools schedule their own demise so they don't get too comfy? Yeah, you know, it's a really good point. What they do is they're not meant to be institutions. And one of the things that Bennett said is that they come forward, they spread their seeds, and then they retreat back into the background. And so, you know, yeah, there's a J.G. Bennett Foundation, there's a Gurdjieff Foundation, whatever, but that real thrust of what they were doing, you know, definitely goes into a kind of hibernation and then it sees what humanity does with the seeds that they've spread. But yes, the comfort thing, no question about it. TJ and Olivia, Mr. Wolf, one baddie zero. I like that. I like that. The wolf is out there. Wise words, Olivia. KLC inspired. Wow, great crew out there in the ideas room tonight. Fantastic. Terry Doherty. Love never fails. I like that. Fulcanelli. And Moral Nomad. Great name. Great to have you with us, sir. Who else have we got? Karen Carpenter, Thomas Ball, Tim Hudson. I know Kate's out there. It's great to see you. Brian Storm, going to watch. Michael Stone. Oh, yeah, Thomas Ball. Fantastic. Terry Doherty, thank you. DJ, to certain schools. That's the one that I got earlier. That's a real interesting question. Fantastic. Have a great night, Olivia Wings Girl from Najat Mandri. Mm-hmm. I didn't see you out there earlier, Najat. It's great to have you with us. Fantastic. Wally Tango Foxtrot, Ray's story, learning is power. I agree. We'll leave it at that. Thank you for that power. Daniel, I really appreciate that, Ray. We will see you all next week. And it says end broadcast, but after all,
never really ends.
It never really ends. We'll see you all next week with that big show. Make sure you're here next Friday. I want to lay some very interesting things on you. It's great to have so many of you here with us tonight. And remember, never let it be forgot. Once there was Camelot. See you soon.
God bless.